Hey folks, Kyle here with the Young Guides Podcast. Before we get into today's episode, I just want to go over a couple of events. First up, Keaton is hosting another fly tying night on March 15th. Space is limited, so make sure that you reach out to us either on our social media accounts, Facebook and Instagram, or by sending us an email at theyoungguidespodcast@gmail.com. Keaton's going to be tying a Dalai Lama streamer. And he's got all the materials that you'll need there. If you got some materials, you can bring them. If you got a vise and tools, bring them. Other than that, Keaton will have all of that provided. Again, reach out to us and Keaton will get in touch with you. Other than that, we have the Cedar River cleanup on August 10th. You know, there's gonna be more information coming out about that as we get closer to that date. Keaton has been hosting that for several years and it's been a super great event and you don't want to miss out. Our last event that we want to touch on today is the NWTF banquet, which is on October 5th. NWTF South Sound Strutters and all those folks there have helped us out immensely with the podcast and have been great partners. So we want to show them some support and hopefully get a few more people to that event and support a great cause. Appreciate you guys listening to the episode. If you like what you're hearing, make sure to leave us a rating and a review wherever you listen to podcasts. It helps us reach more people and get the word out there. So again, thanks for listening today. Leave us a rating, leave us a review, and we will catch you on the episode.
Trust your guide.
Trust your guide.
Fish on.
Let me go, baby. Let's go. Woo-hoo!
Ready to go, Keith?
Oh, baby. Bo-tastic.
No! Oh, Keith.
That is so cool.
Dude, that's a big one.
Nice jet!
Snort was so intimidating. There can't be another animal in North America that can make a room sound remotely like that.
No.
Doesn't get better than that.
But first, a word for our partners.
Alaska Rodco, Alaskan handmade rods.
National Wild Turkey Federation, South Sound Strutters, your conservation organization for Washington State turkey populations and habitats. Shell Art Studio, original Alaskan-focused art.
Slay Jays, it ain't all about the catching.
Welcome back to another episode of the Young Guys Podcast. I'm Keaton, and on today's episode, we're having Keegan Carlson. Keegan is a firefighter on the west side of Washington, and he works as a fishing guide on some of his days off, not all of his days off. He's one of my co-guides at Ellensburg Angler. Keegs is going to be guiding a little bit more than me this season, but I have a lot to thank Keegan for getting me into fly fishing and teaching me a lot about angling and just trying to improve my guidesmanship, I guess you'd call it. Yeah, I'm just really excited to dive in a conversation, learn a little bit about some work-life balance and just chatting with him about fishing and this upcoming season. And if you can't get out with me, you definitely should get out with Keegan here. And so I'm really excited. So with that being said, welcome to the podcast, Keegan.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm stoked to be here. Big fan of the podcast. And
Yeah,
man. I'm can't believe it's taking this long to do this.
I know, loser. No, so let's just kind of dive in here. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
So my name's Keegan. I've been a guide at Ellensburg Angler since 2016. I started out just fishing with the guides at Ellensburg Angler when I was a college student here at Central Washington, where I've gotten to meet Keaton and Kyle and a lot of these awesome guys that know a lot about fishing. So, recently we bought a house in Ellensburg, so I'm living here full time now. And it's been really nice to basically since 2016, you know, I went to school for a few years and then we kind of been bouncing around the state, kind of figuring out what we're going to do with life. And, so it's been really nice to be able to kind of settle down in Ellensburg and basically the river's five minutes from my house. So nice. Boat's always ready in the garage and I always want to go fishing. So it's been very nice to be able to be living like that. Another big part of my life is I'm a fireman in Snohomish County in Washington. So that takes up a lot of my time. So, you know, this last last couple of years I've been kind of figuring out, like you had mentioned, you kind of have a work-life balance. Mm-hmm. So fly fishing has kind of turned into something else for me from what it was in 2016. Yeah. You know, it's kind of turned into more of a therapy than something fun that I do, which has actually made me enjoy it more. So I guided in 2016 through 2020 pretty hard. Mm-hmm. You know, some summers, you know, I was guiding like 15 days in a row, you know, just grinding through the summer. And then about 2020, graduated college, realized with guiding, unless I was going to do something like, you know, Kyle did, where take off and go guiding these, you know, amazing places, that I couldn't really support a family, which is, you know, a goal of mine into the future for me and my wife, Jordan. I decided to go after something that I always thought about, which was being a fireman. So I spent about a year and a half trying to do that and wasn't super focused on guiding. So I had to kind of take a step back from guiding. You know, I was fishing every now and then, but really didn't have any kind of pulse on the river. And then got hired part-time, then full-time as a fireman. And that was a big goal of mine. So we got that done, got through probation. And then the last 2 years been kind of living life in Kittas County, whether that be me and my wife living in our trailer, trying to save money for a house, and now living in a house, here in Ellensburg. So life's kind of feeling like it's finally getting a routine, this last, you know, 6 months or so. And then I'll be guiding, I guess would be considered as like my normal full time now, into the future. So I work about, 2 days a week on 24-hour shifts, and then those days off, I'm gonna be trying to guide as much as I can. So,
yeah.
But yeah, it's a little bit about me and my schedule. So,
yeah. So you live on the east side, and you drive over to the west side to work as a fireman.
I do. Yeah. So I work.
What are those winter mornings like?
They're okay. Yeah. This winter was the first time we bought the house back in end of September, early October. So this was my first winter doing it. And we only had really, there was only one morning that was pretty sketchy. We have a two-wheel drive car and a Tundra. So it's kind of like, which car are we taking this morning? You know, shift changes at 8, but we try to get there about an hour early. So I try to get to the station at 7, and it takes me about 2 hours to get to work on a normal, no traffic, no weather day.
Yeah.
So, you know, most mornings I'm leaving about 4:30, close to 5. But there was one morning I took the two-wheel drive car, and I probably should have taken the truck. But it's not bad. I think I'm sure there's going to be some years into the future where it's a little sketchy, but I'll probably run into some times where the pass is closed and I'll have to go around or something. But it was mild for us this year. So that's probably a topic we're getting into as well. So the snowpack and everything, but
absolutely.
It was mild winter for driving to work. It's nice.
So earlier you said that, you know, you're a fireman, and then guiding is, you enjoy guiding, but it's also kind of a level of therapy for you. Mm-hmm. How have you found firefighting and guiding to kind of blossom together and help you with maybe some tough times that you have in your life?
Yeah. I think there's a lot of people out there that find therapy in fly fishing for sure. Even if you don't, you know, deal with a stressful job or with, there's Project Healing Waters and things like that, you know, people that have gone through very traumatic things find enjoyment and therapy in fly fishing. I'm a very young firefighter. I haven't been through a whole lot, but, you know, it's a stressful job. So from when I was a young college student, just wanting to fish every day, like I loved it when I was doing it, right? Starting a young guy, trying to learn as much as I could, being around guys that, you know, fly fish more than I had and guided more than I had, and just try to be a sponge. You know, I loved that. That's where my love for fly fishing kind of developed. But as I became a firefighter, kind of took a break from fly fishing. You had to put a lot of time into trying to become a fireman. And then coming back to the sport, still in that guide capacity, it's very therapeutic to have a challenge after a stressful shift or, you know, things that you're trying to be good at with that job, being able to put a 10-year-old kid in the front of your boat and have a challenge that's healthy and, you know, something you really still care about. It's hard to explain, but there's something very therapeutic about being able to accomplish that challenge. And, anybody, that's been fly fishing knows that we go on these beautiful places that are, you know, very therapeutic in a way, that kind of help heal the mind and reset you. So, it's fun because it's like my favorite hobby. It's a big part of my life, fly fishing. And then also there's like this new element that has made it even more important in my life of knowing that I have a 30-year career ahead of me and I'm going to deal with some stressful stuff and see some unfortunate events. And it's going to be always a backbone for me going into the future. So
yeah,
it's, I would recommend that to anybody that has anything in their life that they need a backbone for, and dude, fly fishing is it. So at least for me,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
And I think you can speak for, you know, like I'm not a firefighter and I don't see traumatic events every day, but I, you know, I think at some point people do see some stuff in their life, but it definitely is like a healing point. You know, it's relaxing to go out. You know, maybe my stress is different from your stress. You know, your stress might be seeing an unfortunate event. My stress might be, you know, making sure I finish a job on time, or I make sure I'm getting right to work on time, plus trying to balance doing podcasting and
yeah,
having that moment. And I think I can speak for both of us, no matter what's going on in your life, if you can just go hop in a drift boat and go with the river, like it, there's just something there that helps heal you, you know?
Right. Totally. Just
forget for like 2 hours. Right.
Right. My favorite part about it is that there's always a challenge, right? I always try to associate myself with things that you can go through every day and you never stop learning, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think when people give you the label as a guide, it's like, you know everything. It's totally the opposite. It just means we're kind of more involved students of the craft, right? So getting able to go onto the river and not just shut your brain off, but actually have a challenge and know you're going to learn something is great, because you don't turn your brain off. You're like, you know, doing some kind of healing for your brain in a way. So mm-hmm. That's how I see it. So, but well, and it reaches all people of all, everybody has different lives, different stresses, different things that they deal with. And, you know, different reasons for being a part of the fly fishing community. And it, you know, it reaches everybody on all scales. So it's a really, really special sport.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's a great way to put it.
Yeah.
So let's kind of transition here. So you're living in Ellensburg, you're getting out fishing, you're out doing, you know, some guiding and, some stuff we were talking before the podcast, you haven't really done a whole lot, in the winter time, but we're transitioning into, you know, early spring, late winter. What's your plans on getting out? And then let's talk a little bit about fishing on the Yakima. How has it been? I haven't been over there. I've been focusing on a lot of other stuff. So this would be good. I mean, I know we got squalas coming up, correct?
Yeah, so that's kind of the next big thing is squalas. You know, everybody has, for those of the people who don't know, you know, squalas is kind of the start of the Yakima River fly fishing for the year. It's kind of the first big thing. And squala stoneflies, it's our first stonefly hatch of the year. Everybody kind of has their own idea of when they hatch, but it seems to be, you know, around that 50 degree air temperature, you know, when that is sustained over a little while. So I think we have a 50 degree day coming up, but I don't think it'll be enough, because it seems like the temperature kind of drops down again pretty quick. But it might happen. It just, they need that air temperature to be around that 50 degree mark. Everyone that you talk to is going to have a little bit different, rule for when the squalls hatch, but it seems to be around that time. And every year is a little different, but it's usually sometime between, you know, I've seen them hatch, you know, mid to late February all the way into early April. So it kind of just depends on air temperature and climate and what the river's doing. So, but it's starting to get warm. It was a mild winter, so I wouldn't be surprised if they hatch a little early this year, you know, around that March 1st time. But yeah, we'll see what happens. But basically the fish all winter are just kind of being lethargic and lazy and, you know, trying to eat easy meals. And then when they start seeing these stoneflies crawling around a little bit more than they're used to, they get a little more active, and that kind of prompts us to start our season, send our newsletter out and start booking trips. The ones that we haven't yet, to kind of get the season rolling. So, so that's kind of the big thing on the brain, tying some small stoneflies and ordering flies that we're going to need for the year or for the spring. So, that's kind of the next big thing.
Yeah. What do you notice about, let's look at a fish that you catch in the winter time, correct? And then let's look at a fish that you're catching in the summertime. What are some of the physical differences that you notice in like fight appearance, the size of the fish on the Yakima?
Yeah. Wintertime, we seem to catch, you know, less fish as you can imagine, seem to be a little more lethargic. And you know, that's the word I'd use probably the most when describing a fish that's in the wintertime. You think of a fish that's super cold and not willing to fight so much for a meal. They might want, a meal or two throughout the day. Whereas, in the summertime, they're going to be a little more active. You know, they're on the beach partying, they're not looking for super big meals. You know, they're looking for a lot of little meals. They're on the go all day, right? It's kind of how I view it. Someone might view it a little differently, but that's kind of how I approach the, fishing and the opportunities that might present themselves. If you look at the wintertime, you're thinking like, I've always had the analogy of like, the fish are going to look for a big, easy meal. So they might eat a big stonefly or a big worm or something behind a stonefly. Cause there's not a lot of hatches going on, right? There's really almost no hatches. So they might get one or two meals in. So you're kind of presenting that steak, the big steak dinner. You want to put a big steak in front of them. They're already at the table and they're going to eat it and then call it a day. Whereas in the summertime, we have hatches like caddis. Early in the season, we have March Browns. Those kinds of bugs that, there's much more of them, but they're smaller, right? So a fish might sit on the bank in the evening time and just munch on granola bars all day, that's kind of how I approach it. So yeah, that's kind of the difference. They're just a little more active. It's the go time, right? It's time to eat in the summertime, whereas the wintertime is kind of more of a relaxing, more of like a hibernation time. So yeah.
And from my experience is when we're guiding in the summertime, how fast it changes through that 8-hour day, right? You might start out in the morning fishing hoppers, stoneflies, and then, an hour later, you're still fishing that hopper, stoneflies, and that shady parts, but running a dropper right below it, because now they're not just going for, the stonefly or the hopper up top.
Right.
Around the next bend, and it's sunnier. So now you're like, okay, now we got to switch to nymphing. And now you're like, okay, I can work this pats with the hot spot below it. But now I'm going down the river. Now I need double pats. I need double black pats. Mm-hmm. Oh, now the size is different. It's just, it's pretty crazy how different that river can change day by day and pretty much corner by corner. Like something might work in the upper section, but by the time you're getting down to like bighorn or down in the, after your lunch, even it changes so much.
Totally. Yeah. Any given flow can be a little different. That's kind of the beauty of our river too, is that, some rivers throughout the West are the same river for 40 miles, right? The same geography, mm-hmm. the same types of buckets that you're going to be fishing, the same type of fish activity, where the Yakima, it's a hard river to get burned out on because you have a lot of different sections that fish a lot differently. They're eating somewhat of the same bugs, it's similar program, but where fish sit and depending on the flows and geography of the river, you're going to be changing your way of fishing a little bit differently. And when you talk about the canyon, summertime floats, they're going to change throughout the day. So we're going to adapt how we're fishing to the way they're acting. And that's where why it can be kind of a challenging river for some people that don't fish the river very often. When you, like you said, you start out in the morning, you launch at 6 a.m., there's shade on the water, the fish are, haven't really had hatches throughout the night, so they're kind of hungry. We throw big bugs at them on the bank. When there's some shade, they feel safe. And then, that sun kind of gets overhead and they feel less safe, and they're, maybe looking for flies more underneath the water. They say the 80-20 rule, 80% underneath the water and 20% on the surface. you know, that changes a little bit in the early morning. And that, I think that holds more true in the middle of the day when you have, you know, not the greatest conditions. It's warm. There's a lot of UV light on the surface of the water. So they're going to kind of think twice, you know. It's not that it's not going to happen. They're just going to be less comfortable. So that's where we changed to nymphing, you know, dry dropper, that kind of thing. And then, yeah, the evening time again, that's one of the beauties of the canyon is that our sunset's a little earlier because you got those big tall walls in the canyon. So once shade's back on the water, it seems like dry fly fishing gets a little better, and that 80-20 rule kind of starts to fizzle out and turns maybe in even to more 60-40. So yeah. That we heavily advertise that because it is a spectacle to see when the shade hits the water and fish get hungry and more active. And I don't think it's necessarily that they get more hungry or more active. It's just they don't have to think as hard, and they don't have to think twice. They're just more comfortable, you know?
Yeah.
So
if you're, let's say I'm going to put you on the spot here.
Yeah. That's good.
Let's say you are trying to entice someone to come fishing with you on the Yakima River. What are some of the characteristics being geographical, you know, water, the fish? What would you say to a person saying, this is why I think you should come fish the Yakima River?
Let's see. I think the biggest one is that it's just a unique river for Washington State. So if they're a Washington State resident, you know, we're the only blue ribbon trout stream in Washington, which means, you know, we have selective rules. We don't use bait. All fish go back. So it's a very unique fishery in that sense, open every day of the year. And then I think what I like to tell people too is that it's a very diversified river where you, like I had said, mentioned earlier, you know, I can provide as a guide, a lot of different experiences, right? So I can kind of cater a little bit more to the needs of the guest, right? So, if they told me they have a certain goal, our river allows us to provide that, right? So I have a guest that comes out every year, and you know, one of his goals is he just wants to catch cutthroat. He just loves cutthroat trout. Well, I can provide that experience by going to a certain place on the river at a certain time and a certain time of the year. You know, some rivers don't allow us to do that. Mm-hmm. So I would just say that, you know, if a guest was coming out, be like, you know, I can cater to your needs, maybe a little bit more than other guides could on other rivers. So
yeah,
that'd be kind of my big selling point. And then also, I think our river is just unique river for the West. And for people that live, you know, we cater to a lot of guests in the Seattle area. It's kind of like a short stop, a checkpoint before heading to Montana, which is always, you know, the big poster, right? Yeah. People want to go fish the Western Montana rivers for big trout in Montana. We have a little slice of that here on the Yakima in Washington State. So it's right in their backyard.
Yeah. Well, I just to add on to that, I would say the wildlife by biodiversity is quite thriving. I mean, you can go down a river and see turkeys, you can see chuckers, some days, not every day, not every trip, you can see bighorn rams, and then you can see mule deer. I mean, you said, I think we had one trip, I'll let you tell the story, about you saw some cats, right, going up the river.
Oh yeah, that was a fun day. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. But yeah, like you said, our river is very very diverse in wildlife and fish and just geography. So it is really a hidden gem of Washington for people that aren't in the fly fishing community. But yeah, we had I had a guest one day. I can't remember what year that was. Probably it was like pre-COVID. Yeah, I was going to say 2019. Yeah, it was pre-COVID. We were floating in the canyon. For those that are familiar with the canyon, it's kind of around that mile marker 20 spot, you know, the Beaver Tail Bend. And just before that, there's a little island in the middle of the river and big rock formations on the river there, on River Right. And, you know, we always look as guides, you know, we're trying to provide an experience, not just, you know, we know it's more than just the fish. So we're looking for wildlife constantly. And usually around that area, we can see bighorn sheep, mule deer, turkeys, eagles almost all the time. And I was fishing with a client. He was an older gentleman, you know, maybe 60s or 70s in the front of the boat. We were having a great day, put in that ringer. I think we were floating to a slat or something. And he's looking too, you know, he'd been on the river before. He's always looking for bighorn sheep. And he's looking up and he's like, "What's that?" And I look up and I'm like, "Oh, I'm not sure." You know, and we had seen some kind of figure moving up the top of the hill. And I was like, "I'll grab my binos." And he goes, "I think it's a cougar." And I was like, "No, it's not." You know, like, no, like just from my short experience, like, there's no cougars down here.
Yeah.
And sure as shit, I grab my binos, I glass them, and it's a big cougar. And then behind, he's like, "There's something behind it." And I kind of glass behind it, and there's a cub. I don't know, is it a cougar cub?
Yeah, that's like a cub or kitten.
Or kitten, yeah. And there's another one behind a little kitten. And I go back to the mom, and she's dragging a hindquarter of a deer up the hill too. Yeah. With her, part of a deer. And I was like, "Holy shit." Yeah, I couldn't believe what I was seeing. But yeah, I handed him the binos and he looked, and yeah, he had some kind words to say. But we anchored up and just walked in for a bit, and they just made their way up over the top of the hill. But so I haven't seen any cougars in the canyon since then. But it's crazy, you know, every time you go on the river, you see something else. So yeah. I know this last year some guys saw some bears on the river, kind of near that state area. So you know, there's a lot of wildlife on a river, elk and deer. Yeah, it's a cool place to be for sure.
I'm gonna take the spotlight from you. I got a story.
Yeah, you go for it.
This summer, so I had two clients, right? The parents dropped them off. It was a kid. It was two brothers. One was like 16, and I think the other one was 11. And they're like, "Hey, we're just looking. You know, I think the parents were going on a date that day, and they dropped the kids off with us." And so I'm like, "Okay, cool." So we hop in the boat. I'm doing all my lessons and stuff. We're rowing down, and we go from like ringer down, and we're kind of getting into, we're just going around like bighorn, and we're hitting that flat, right? So down the flat, and the kid in the front seat, he's like looking down the river, and I'm like, "What is this guy looking at?" And there's this water just waking. And I'm what's that? I don't remember there being a boulder there. What the heck? And the guy's like, the kid turns to me and he goes, "That's a car." And I go, "A car on the right side of the river?" So like the road, if you're not familiar, on the canyon runs on the left side of the river. And then I would say, how far do you think that stretches down there? It's like on the other side, there's a railroad track.
Maybe just short of a football field, probably.
Probably you know, a football field. Yeah. 80 yards. And so this car is sitting on the right side of the river. So someone had to launch this car, you know, from the road, or drive it up the railroad tracks and then launch it off the railroad tracks into the river. So I have these two kids and I'm going down. I don't know what to do. I don't got service.
They don't train for that.
This kid is flipping. He's like, Keaton, what if there's a body or something in it? I'm like, I don't know. We're gonna go look. So we're fishing, and I'm like, "Okay, we're gonna fish right up to this car, and then we'll go around it." And I was like, "Just look in." And it was like a Hyundai or whatever, SUV. And we go right by it, and they had all the windows down in the car. They were definitely trying to sink the car. It did not work, I will tell you that, because the water was going right over it. But yeah, the wrong type of fish habitat we want in the Yakima River. So,
yeah, no, not good.
What a story.
Yeah, I think that week too, someone put a car in Wilson Creek too, like just south of Thrall there.
Yeah.
Out south of Ringer.
Not good.
Was, in the water that day.
Yeah, a lot of cars belong on the road, people.
Yeah. I don't know how they got it across. My thought is that I don't know. I'm sure it's in an article somewhere. I don't know. Did you figure out how they got it in the river? Is there an actual report done?
I I just remember when we went by it, I thought they like knew about it already. And I was like, okay, what, you know, whatever. They must be leaving it, because sometimes they'll leave it and then they'll come back and, you know, they'll pull it out. But as we go to like another mile down the river, I just start hearing sirens everywhere. Yeah. And I was like, oh, dang. I'm like, there was nothing I could do about it at that moment, because I don't have service in that section of the canyon. But right. I never did figure out. By the end of our trip, they already pulled it out to, they had it on like a back of a tow truck. A really nice brand new SUV, but.
Wow.
All types.
I think the closest place would be right there. If you go like right as you enter the canyon, right before this rattlesnake hike, I think it's the closest place they could get on the tracks. South of there, they can't get on there. You know, it's pretty far down into the canyon when they can get on the tracks.
Yeah.
My thought is that maybe they put in it, they were like drove into the river at Bighorn, and then it took them a while for their car to sink, but it kind of floated with the river. But I don't know. It's still pretty far. I mean, you're like several hundred yards downstream from Bighorn, right? Yeah.
Well, how crazy. And like, I never, you know, the one thing we were looking for is for people. Like, we were just like, oh man, was this like an accident, you know? And somehow maybe someone passed out or something. But it just seemed like when we went by it, like with all the windows down, it just seemed kind of like these guys probably, you know, or gals stole a car and put it in the river trying to get rid of, you know, the evidence, trying to whatever.
Right. Yeah, because people that have been in the canyon know too, like, it's all the road runs parallel with the river, and there's no like parking lot where you can get speed to like jump across the river or something.
Yeah.
You know, like to get that far across is pretty, pretty crazy.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, that's a good point. Maybe they backed it up in Bighorn and just threw a brick on it and just let her fly.
Maybe. But I mean, I think it takes a while for those cars to sink, but
it spun. So it was facing, the windshield was facing us. So it was facing upriver and we're coming down.
Yeah. Huh.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. At that moment, you're like, man, I really hope everyone knows how to row.
Yeah. Yeah. You're not going to do anything. You're going to get pinned on that car if you try to help or anything. So
yeah,
probably a bad plan. But yeah, you feel a little helpless when you want to help them if you can. But yeah, I'm sure. I don't think they found anybody in the car. They were just trying to ditch it.
Well, let's talk about, so you got into guiding around 2017, I would say.
Yeah, I met the guides at 2016 when I moved to school. You were with me that day. And then 2017 was my first season. So I think my first guide trip was that spring of 2017, summer of 2017. So,
Do you want to talk about how you met Mike Keegan?
Yeah, I got a good one there. Yeah, so Mike Kennedy, he's the founder of Ellensburg Angler. He founded it back in, 2013, somewhere around there, I think. Sorry if I'm wrong on that one, but I believe it's around there. He was the owner at the time when I met him. Well, anyway, me and Keaton were just starting school at Central Washington. We were freshmen. And I don't even think school had started yet. It was like early September.
It was my birthday. You moved into
the dorm. What was that?
That was my birthday.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Fishing.
Yeah, school had started then, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was just a couple weeks into school. I had applied to one college. I knew where I was going. I wanted to be near the Yakima. And I always loved Central Washington. We had a family friend's cabin here in Ellensburg since I was really young, and always came over fishing with dad and stopping through when we were on our way to Montana or Idaho or whatever. And I knew where I wanted to go. So I applied to one school, came here 2 weeks in. I had resumes printed off on my desk in my dorm. Like, I wanted to take them to all the fly shops. I wanted to work in a fly shop. I wasn't even thinking about guiding. Just thought it'd be a really cool job through college. And the day that I had him printed off, you know, I had just met Keaton. He had told me it was his birthday, and he had never or you said you had casted a fly rod a little bit, but you needed some lessons fishing. So I was like, well, we don't have a boat or anything, but there's this lake that I fish near the river since I was really, really young. We can go do that. And you're like, yeah, let's go do it. So we headed down there one day, took a couple fly rods, and we went out on the dock and started casting. And you know us, we're new to the sport, so we're wearing our waders and standing on a dock of a lake. And you know, there's a couple of people there spin fishing and stuff, and I'm just teaching Keaton the basics of the cast. And we were just chatting about fishing, and all of a sudden Mike rolled up with his kid, and you know, he had the big black truck with www.ellensburgangler.com on the side, you know, and I knew who they were, and I was, you know, I got all nervous and tight, and I was like, oh no, you know, and I'm like, oh my God, they're coming onto the dock, you know, and they walked up, and me and Mike had exchanged a few words, and I think he had watched me maybe teach you to cast a little bit. Well, I had some small talk with Mike, and then I said, you know, have a nice day or whatever. We didn't even get into my desire to work as a guide or as a guy in a shop. Keaton and I leaving the dock, and you know, those boat launches are a little slippery. So I had stepped off the dock a little too early as we were headed back to shore, and yeah, I stepped on the slick boat launch, and it fell on my ass. And everybody on the dock saw it. It was just enough water to make a big splash, and filled my waders a little bit. And you know, I'm just kicking myself. I'm like, how the hell did I do that? Of course, you know, Keegan Carlson classic, you know, embarrass myself like that. So anyway, I just shook it off. We walked down the bank of the lake a little bit and did a little bit more casting. I don't know, maybe you had caught a fish or something. We were all stoked about that. And you know, I think we had called it a day. So I glanced back to the dock, and Mike was still standing there on the dock. And I dropped the tailgate on my truck, started breaking down my rods, taking my waders off. And I watched Mike put his kid in the truck, and then he started walking towards our rig.
Yep.
And anyway, he had come over and introduced himself and asked if I wanted to fish with him and a couple of their guides that weekend. He was basically looking for guides and was curious if I wanted to guide. And I wasn't even thinking about guiding, but I was like, not going to turn that opportunity down. So I think that was like midweek. And that Saturday I had met Stefan and Todd and Mike, who are now some of my best friends. And I live two blocks from Stefan now. And, you know, Mike had always joked that he saved me from the other fly shops in town from working in the shops. So, it was kind of cool. I got to kind of forego the working in the shop part of, most people's guiding journey. You know, a lot of guys spend a lot of time in the shop, learning the tricks of the trade and running shuttles and helping, assisting the guides. And I got to kind of skip all that and learn in a more of an expressed way, which is, I'm very thankful for and very, very happy. I got to meet the guides in Ellensburg Angler. We're all, they're all great dudes and, very good teachers and have come to be some of my best friends in life. So, very happy for the opportunity, but yeah, it started in kind of a funny way. Always a story that gets told every now and then.
Dude, I've been with you on some of your dips, right? Like, I mean, remember that time we were fishing kind of like the farmland section, we were crossing that part of the river. Park.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Irene. And we went across and we fished that side channel, and then we were coming back, and I'm walking across, I'm sidestepping, and Keegan's like, okay, be careful, blah, blah, blah. And then out of nowhere, I hear, bloop, and I look back and Keegan's gone.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh gosh, like, what am I going to tell Jordan? Like, he's under, I got to go look for him. I start freaking. And then out of nowhere, you just hear, whoosh. Like, I'm trying to get his breath. He's like, this is cold as shit, dude.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I, just trying to be like Brad Pitt, you know?
Yeah. River.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was fun.
That was before I learned what felt was. Yeah. Slipping and sliding into my childhood waders. No spikes, nothing, just pure rubber, but
just going for it.
Definitely my learn to wade phase.
Yeah.
I do better in a drift boat. Let's just say that.
So So you've had quite a bit of experience. I mean, you've talked about, you know, learning, teaching me. That was kind of like the, I would say I was like your project number one, right? Is learning how to teach me to fly cast. I still think about those days, you know, that, you know, I'm very thankful that I met you, teaching me how to fly cast in the Bardo grass, and then going through and trying to break apart the pieces with me and teach me. And then now seeing, you know, I'm your protege, what you'd say.
I don't know about that, man. I mean, I don't know if you've ever really realized it. I mean, I knew how to fly fish when I was young, but I didn't have, you know, that much experience. You know, the things I was teaching you, I had learned 2 weeks prior from Stefan and Todd. You know, if anything, you assisted me more in learning how to guide and teach things to people.
Yeah. You know? So, but you definitely are one of the reasons that I got into fly fishing, and now look at me, I enjoy guiding just as much as you, and just being out on the river. So, you know, a lot of things to be thankful there in our friendship and learning to guide, you know, Stefan, Todd, Kyle, you've really helped me on this journey. And, you know, now I get to enjoy weeknights talking about fishing and hunting with people on a podcast, and, you know, I'm getting out fishing and, you know, teaching classes and stuff now. If you asked me in 2016 if I ever thought I'd be doing this stuff, I would have looked at you and be like, fly fishing classes? Absolutely not, dude.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So, yeah, dude, you've been killing it, dude. Doing classes and guiding a bunch and kind of taking over the cedar and, you know, doing cleanups. And yeah, man, this podcast is big too. You spend a lot of time doing this, and a lot of people will be connected through this podcast too. You and Kyle have been kicking ass. So
yeah,
we'll see that. But yeah, man, that's what the sport's all about. You know, I was the young kid that got trained up by guys that had been around for a bit. And now I'm, you know, when Stefan was teaching me, Stefan and Todd were teaching me, you know, they had about, you know, 8 to 10 years on the river. And me and Jordan just did the math the other day. This is going to be my 8th season, I think. And now me and Todd are bringing on a new guy now, the young guy from college. And, you know, it just comes full circle. We're now putting the time in to bring new guides on, and, you know, in 6 to 8 years, he's going to be training somebody else. Yeah. So it's just the continuous cycle, and, it's crazy to be a part of it. So, yeah.
It's fun times, you know, yeah. And I don't think we dove into talking about, just Ellensburg angler and the community that we have with it, you know, Todd, Stefan, you, I mean, all of our past guides that we've had, we've all just come together, and I mean, we build a friendship, right? It's fun because you'll be fishing. Yeah. We're fishing with different clients and stuff, but you know, you might roll past one and be like, oh, this is Todd, throw an indicator out here and we'll hook a fish right next to him. Or, you know, it's just fun times. We give each other some crap here and there, and at the same time we help each other, you know.
Totally.
We can get a look and be like, you'll be like, oh, brown pats 16 inches. You know, so what a community.
Yeah, totally. And you know, there's a lot of good guide services on the river, our river, and I haven't been a part of any other team, but I know for sure that our team has a really great culture. And that's one of the reasons why I really like our team. You know, there's no ego involved when it comes to guide sharing info. You know, Todd helped me out a lot last year. It was my first year as a fireman and guiding. And you know, there's a lot of days where I'd get off shift and I have a trip that evening and I don't know what's going on. I've been on the river for 3 days and he gives me a short report of basically what the river's been doing, and I get to have a successful trip. You know, and same goes for other guides that I've been able to pass information on to you if you're coming over, having guided for a week. And, you know, I don't think a lot of guide services have that culture. And I'm really happy to say and proud to say that we have that at Ellensburg Angler. A lot of guides that are a lot of clients that come out with us frequently know that we have a family culture, and that we're all basically, you know, brothers, and we share information and
absolutely.
We hang out together. Like Stefan was over with his family last night. We were chatting about stuff. And so we all hang out outside of guiding and go fishing together. And so we have a, a really unique community at our guide service. So
what's one tip that you could give to an angler looking to start guiding, working in the industry, be a fly shop? What's one thing that you could tell them, hey, this is, I would say, is what you should lead with, and this is kind of how you should do it? You don't have no one has the right answer, right? But what's right. One thing that you felt like that you've learned through your years of guiding?
There's a lot of parts of my life where I just try to be a sponge. You know, I've learned that from other people. And that's really what I did growing up, was into growing up into the fly fish community, was just try to be a sponge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, try to learn as much as you can and don't have an ego. I think it's harder for certain people than others. There is ego involved in almost anything. And if you go into the sport not having an ego, and learning, keeping your ears open, your eyes open, your mouth shut, you're going to learn a lot. And you can just know that everything you're going to learn is you're going to be able to pass on to the people, and it's going to affect other people's lives. And that's where the passion comes from.
Yeah.
And then, you know, more on a basic scale, you know, don't do it on your own. So I would suggest that you reach out to a guide service. We have multiple people that have reached out to us that want a guide or just want info on how to start. And we share that information. We have a guide, younger guy coming from the Leavenworth area. He's a college student, and he's learning how to guide. And he reached out to Todd and wanted to learn how to guide. So guess what? We're taking him on floats and giving him the info he needs. This last week I helped him get all squared away with his guide license with Washington State and insurance and all that. So, you know, if he hadn't reached out to us, he'd be doing it on his own and maybe even doing it wrong. So, when it comes to, you know, state regulations and stuff. So, definitely have people reach out to the guide services, whether that be anywhere. So, yeah.
You know, and I want to add on too. I think this is like, once you become a guide, one thing that I don't think people tell you, and I'm no financial advisor or anything, but definitely keep track of what you're spending, you know, keep your receipts and keep all that intact. So when tax season comes around, you can just hand them the information versus being like, where did I put that receipt? Or where was that fly shop receipt? Or where did this go? You know, have that all kind of in order. It definitely helps at the end. Because like in years, you know, when I first started guiding, it would take me a while to get everything collected and then type it all in and then do my taxes, versus now I'm like, okay, here's the receipts. This is the gas. This is that, you know. So
you definitely want to stay organized. It helps you at the end. At the end of the year,
everything.
Totally. The end of the year, you're going to have to compile everything and do your taxes. And if you're organized, you won't have to worry about that. So.
And your, you know, organization comes into your guiding too. Like, find ways, you know, the way I run my boat is going to be different than the way Keegan's going to run his boat. Right. And I don't have the same storage that Keegan has. So you kind of have to be innovative. And, you know, find things that work. Like, I have little containers underneath my bench up front that I can reach down and pull out flies and all that. Versus he flips open in his adipose. He's got all these different storages. I think he's even got like a restaurant in there and some, you know, a bunch of different stuff, an ATM, all that. I don't have
pizza oven.
I still got to, you know, push it. No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, you know what I mean? Finding ways. That's one way to help you.
Yeah. That's the unique part of the job too, is you get to kind of make your own business. I don't run the exact same way Todd does. I don't run the exact same way Stefan does, and you know, vice versa. You don't run the same way I do. You figure out what works for you. And I mean, you're the captain. You get to set up your business how you want to, with the information you're getting from your buddies and from the guide team.
Well, Keegan, I think we've had a great conversation here. Is there anything that we didn't talk about that you wanted to talk about?
No, not really. I think I appreciate you having me come on, and we miss Kyle. Let's hope to chat with him too. I'm very happy you had me on, and appreciate anybody that listened. I just would say, you know, you guys keep doing what you're doing. I love this podcast. I have guests that listen to it. buddies at the fire department that listen to it as well.
Oh, that's awesome. They're
spreading some really good info about a lot of different stuff. And you've experienced it. You know, a lot of young guides get catch some shit on the river for being oblivious to certain things and just being the new guys, right? You're bringing some credibility to the importance of having young people in the sport when it comes to, you know, conservation and taking care of our waterways and just the full enjoyment of just the sport.
Yeah.
You guys are providing that. It's a very unique podcast. And as a young guide, I do appreciate it. And I know a lot of other people do too. So yeah. I hear it secondhand from a lot of people that you don't get to hear. So
that's awesome.
You do what you're doing and keep fighting the good fight.
Ooh, they give me some goosebumps. That definitely is that's really nice to hear, because doing a podcast at times, and I've talked to other people that do podcasts, it's a grind, and you don't always hear that instant feedback that you're looking for. You're like, am I doing this right? Or are we doing this right? So it's cool to hear from firsthand, and then you hearing from other people. You know, I was just telling Kyle the other day, I'm at the sportsman show, and I was handing out like a cleanup invitation, like, hey, come to my cleanup. And some guy looks down at it and he goes, dude, I love the Young Guides podcast. And I was like, oh, what's up? My name's Keaton. And he's like, oh, hey, how's it going?
Yeah.
And we just got into a conversation about, like, you know, he wants to get his kids into fly fishing, and, you know, what kind of rods should he get his kids? And it was just really cool to have that blossom and feel like, you know, we do make an impact. You know, I know that maybe sometimes we're not always correct, and, you know, we have our ups and downs, and you guys may not realize it, but we definitely have podcasts that we feel like we knock out of the park. And then we also have podcasts that we're like, man, this was a tough conversation to, we're talking to a bunch of different personalities. I mean,
right. Well, that's the beauty of the podcast, is that every podcast would be different. That's the, what makes it so great, is you're bringing on people with a lot of different experiences, a lot of different backgrounds, and you're being able to kind of spread that wealth of knowledge, to people throughout the whole sport, and people that are trying to get into it. And you know, the other cool thing that is unique, I'm sure you guys have realized it, but you're reaching two different communities. You're reaching the Alaskan community with Kyle, and you're also here in Washington State, you know, reaching the people of the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah.
There's a lot of young people trying to get in the sport, and when they find podcasts like your guys's, it gives them a lot of faith and a lot of understanding, and you know, helps them feel better about getting into whatever it is in the outdoors.
So yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Okay. I got a few quick questions for you here, and then we'll do a little outro here. So,
okay, cool.
What kind of music are you listening to when you're going fishing?
Ooh, it changes throughout the year. Man, I'd say most of the time it's going to be rock and roll. I have a rock and roll playlist with like 300 songs on it. It's just a bunch of different styles of rock and roll. And, I'll kind of just put that on shuffle. Recently it's been no music, just kind of enjoying the peace and quiet.
Yep.
Yeah, like Jordan and I went on a float this last week, and we didn't listen to any music. We just enjoyed the peace and quiet, the conversation, and hanging out. But yeah, I'd say rock and roll is probably the go-to most of the time. But I grew up on country, so that's always nostalgic for me as well.
Yeah. What's a dream fishery for you to go fishing in?
This like the end of life, I only choose one, or just one of the ones on my bucket list, because it's deep.
let's do like, okay, your fishery that you have to hit before you die.
I would say probably El Pescador has just been on my mind a lot, in the Belize. It's just so different from anything that I've ever done.
Yeah.
Right. Like fishing the flats for all these like exotic fish are just, it'd be very unique trip. Even if I went and didn't catch any fish, it'd just be a really cool thing to experience. Just take a few buddies down there and spend, you know, 3 or 4 days fishing. That'd be a great way to end fly fishing for me. So
absolutely. Yeah. Your You're headed out on the river. It's just you fishing. What's your river snack and river drink of choice?
Ooh. Let's see. Whenever I hit the river, I'm always low on vitamin R, so probably Rainier. Okay. And let's go with Dots pretzels.
Dots pretzels. All
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Probably the honey mustard ones. I fished with a buddy last week and he brought some Dots pretzels and he left them in the cooler and I was all stoked. But yeah, classic for sure.
That was a tough one for you, Keegan, because I know that from fishing with you, when you open your cooler and stuff, there's always like, hey, you want this? You want this? You want that? I got here's a granola bar. Here's some snacks. Here's this. So,
hey man, you don't fish well when you're hangry.
You don't.
No, you've been hangry in my boat before.
Oh yeah.
You don't catch fish. And I'm a really bad guide when I'm hungry, don't have any food or I'm hungry.
Oh, that's fun. All right, let's do this one. What is one word to describe yourself?
I'd say compassionate. Compassionate. Yeah, I'm just
I like it.
I just try to especially when I'm fishing or at work or around other people, I'm just always trying to think how I can, you know, make another person happy and kind of help fix their problems and do what I can for them. I think we're all selfish in a way. Definitely have aspects of my life where I'm selfish, but I love fly fishing because I get to provide an experience for other people. And I think it goes without saying my other job. You gotta have some compassion in your life to do that job too. So
yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah.
All right, Keegan, I'm going to give you the stage here. Let's hear how people can get in contact with you, how they can do a trip with you.
Yeah, of course. So the easiest way to book a trip through Ellensburg Angler is by calling the shop. The phone number is 509-607-1804. You'll either get in touch with Todd or his wife, Sarah. They do all our booking. They have my availability and can help you get in contact with me if you have questions about fishing or just going and need to know what bugs are working or you want to book a trip. So that's the easiest way to book trips. You can also find us on Facebook. Our social media game has been pretty weak since Kyle left. He was kind of running that. So I've been kind of slowly taking over social media, trying to get back into it. I'm not very good at it. So my wife's been helping me. She's a marketing strategist. So she's been helping me with that. So I've been taking over the Facebook, thinking about taking over the podcast and Instagram. So you can find us on those platforms. And then you can always reach me at Keegan. It's K-E-E-G-A-N at ellensburgangler.com. I'm checking that email quite often. You can reach me that way as well. Feel free. You know, I don't hesitate to reach out even if you just have quick questions about fishing. And you don't necessarily just have to reach out to me to book trips. I'm always happy to chat fishing and what the river's doing, and especially into the foreseeable future, I'll be having a pulse on the river and trying to know what's going on. So yeah. I welcome anybody that wants to talk fishing and talk about what's working. And that's like awesome. I said, most of us in Ellensburg Angler don't really have an ego when it comes to sharing information. So we're happy to do that. So yeah,
that's super cool.
Yeah.
Well, cool, Keegan. I'm going to do a little outro here. Well, I want to thank Keegan for hopping on today. I want to thank him being a firefighter and being a guide and just being a downright cool dude. We just appreciate you and the communities and all types of communities appreciate you, and we're happy that you're a part of them. So we want to thank you for that.
Well, thank you, man. I appreciate you having me on, and I'm really, really happy to have a conversation with you. So.
Absolutely. We got some upcoming events coming up. We have a Cedar River cleanup August 10th. Get that on your calendars. We hope to see you there. Always a great time. We're always, you know, last year we gave away rods, gear. We cleaned up the river. We pulled out tons of trash. And then we usually have a lunch and just kind of a social. And we talk about fishing, talk about the outdoors. We talk about just being part of the Renton community. It's always one of my favorite times of the year. It takes a little bit to plan out, but you know, I'm very thankful for doing it, and I look forward to year by year. So if you're interested in that, check it out. NWTF has a list of upcoming events that we're really excited about. You can check that out on their social media. I know the Yakima banquet for the NWTF chapter in Yakima is next weekend. Well, I think when this podcast comes out, it will already be passed. So scratch that. But NWTF is always posting stuff. They got a Jake's Day coming up in July. The Westside banquet's on October 10th this year. I went last year, and man, it was awesome. You can bid on all types of different stuff. It's all going into conservation in Washington State. So if you got the time to support NWTF and you're not an NWTF member, make sure to check that out. Become part of NWTF. We're doing more than just turkey conservation. We're doing conservation for all wildlife, because when we do conservation efforts in an area, you're helping deer, you're helping elk, you're helping the wildlife, you're keeping things wild, and that's what we're all about. They also do a bunch of outreach, trying to get new hunters involved, trying to get kids involved, kids days. It's just a great organization to be a part of, and I'm gonna say it, I would say outdoorsmen, hunters, anglers, we care about conservation downright. You know, we're involved. A lot of the people that get involved in these cleanups and into tree plantings, a lot of us hunt and fish, and you got to have people that are passionate about what they do and what they're about. And NWTF is passionate about, you know, hunting and fishing and the outdoors, and I've been a part of them for 3-4 years now, and I'll be a part of them till the day I die. So straight up. Slay J, she's got jigs upcoming. I mean, we're gonna have some spring kings coming up. We got steelheads still going about in the PNW, and then she sells trout jigs, so she's got it all covered. If you're interested in, maybe you're not a fly fisherman, maybe you want to try a jig fisherman, be a coming in jig fisherman, go check out Slay J, order some jigs. She also ties flies, so you can do orders through her, reach out to her, and she'll tell you if she can do it or if she can't do it. But most of the time she can't, and she won't really let you down, because that's the type of company she's running. It's a woman ran business. Proud to be part of a Washington State business, and we're definitely proud and happy to have her on our podcast as a partner. Shell Art Studio, another one. She's creating logos. She does wall art, stickers. I mean, go check out her website. She's always got like some flash deals coming up. She's always making stickers. She's helped multiple companies with their logos. So if you're a company that's looking for your logo, you're an outdoors company, reach out to Shell's Art Studio. I think on Instagram it's under like Shelly's Art. But yeah, she is amazing, and she's an Alaska owned business, and we're proud to have her as a partner. Alaska Rod Co. I just want to plug Matt. Matt is one of the downright coolest guys I know. We've talked about it before, but we've had rods. I'm down in Washington State at a rod break. I sent it to him. He had a new tip on the rod and back to my front door in about a week and a half. I mean, you don't really hear about that nowadays. As a whole, you know, sometimes it can take a month, 2 months. When I was working on Orvis, sometimes it'd take a long time. Having Alaska Rod Co. get me my rod and get it back fishing is like so important to me. And I just really appreciate Matt and what he's doing. And Matt's about to create some of the coolest stuff coming up. I'm not going to release it, but looking forward to fishing some of these new rods coming out soon. So shout out to Matt. I think that's everyone that I can think of. So I just want to thank Keegan again. Thank you for hopping on with us today. And then, everyone that takes time and listens to the Young Guides podcast, I appreciate you week after week, and hearing what Keegan just said to me today on the podcast really means a lot. And that's why we keep coming back week after week, and we're grinding. So big news coming up with the Young Guides podcast. Stay tuned. I've been saying this for probably months now, but we are working hard, we are grinding, and we want people in the industry that are doing the right things, fish handling, making sure that, you know, people are getting out there and enjoying what our resources that we have, and we're treating them right, right? And giving back. So thank you again for listening to our podcast. Kyle and I appreciate you guys every week giving us feedback, leaving us reviews on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and just letting us know how we're doing. So with that being said, this was another episode of the Young Guys Podcast. We'll catch you on the next one.